actually had, this is a funny segue, I had the pleasure of talking with Stevie Lennox and Brian Coney, who are part of this band that is just playing now called Junk Drawer. And I think they're so great. It's kind of an indie psych, punk rock, a little bit adjacent vibe from Ireland. And they recently came out with a new album called Days of Heaven. And I think it's really great. We talk a lot more about it in the interview, so I'll just play that and let you have a listen. But yeah, this is Junk Drawer, and here's the interview now. So you guys started releasing music together as a band in 2016. Now having released your sophomore album and two EPs, what's it like kind of reflecting on your development as a band since you began working together?
We did a recent interview. Stevie and Jake did actually at the weekend for a different radio station. And I actually had a bit of an epiphany based on what they both said on this, a similar question. And I feel like we're much less inclined to kind of wear our influences on our sleeve. We're not determined for people to know that we're fans of, you know, Slint or Pavement or Dinosaur Jr. or these bands that we used to love. Whereas now I feel like we're just more comfortable in our skin to organically play music and not try to prove anything.
And I guess that just kind of comes with, you know, getting more comfortable with each other and exploring what that sound looks like collaboratively, eh?
100%. No, I totally agree with what Brian said. It's one of those things where, you're showing the world that this is all the music that I like. This is an amalgamation of all those things. And now it's like, yeah, it is absolutely just, this is us showing you who we are now. We maybe have something to say now after 10 years.
That's true. I'd say that's not entirely uncommon for bands who are, you know, pushing into their 30s and, you know, I put that mildly for myself, but it's one of those things where it's just, I think it's a byproduct of getting beyond your teenage years or your 20s where you're less inclined to insist upon what you love, but it's like way more organic and it feels... is really natural for us.
That's so nice to hear, and I feel like, you know, releasing an album with that kind of mindset must be really satisfying in a way. I did want to talk about Days of Heaven particularly. It's so great. I've been really enjoying listening to it. I think it's such a beautiful record, and it has such great range, but also, you know, from start to finish, it makes so much sense and flows on really beautifully. How do you think your approach has changed in writing this record compared to your last Ready for the House?
I suppose. Also, thank you so much. That's a really, really nice thing to hear. Yeah, I suppose it's your first, with the first album, things are drips and drabs. I think originally it was going to be an EP. We sort of thought, oh yeah, let's write another EP. And then I hit a point where we're chatting to the producer, Chris, who we've done the last three releases with, and he said, you know, you guys are like covering a lot of terrain here. It might make more sense in the context of an album anyway. So that was where we sort of, so that album, you know, was done in maybe 2 to 3 different sessions over a prolonged period of like a year and a half. This one was, let's get in a studio, decide what the vocabulary is of the record. So we've got like a certain amount of gear we're going to use. There's going to be us all talking about, we're far more lyrically collaborative this time as well. Like there were times we'd be sitting, you know, choosing, you know, working out what the verse was. It'd be shared lead vocals, so we're sort of, I'm writing what I'm singing, Jake or Brian are writing what they're singing, but we're really talking about what the songs mean. I think everything is much more collaborative, and then having that like one full week in the studio to record Days of Heaven, we were all totally in residence, so we were like really in each other's pockets for being with Chris as well, producer. We're in each other's pockets for, you know, 7 days. So you sort of build up a wee language and it becomes its own little sound world. And I think we wouldn't have been, I think our comfort zone would have been to stay closer to home and do things when we're ready for them. But this is way more of a challenge. I was a little bit nervous going in, but once you get settled into the vibe of it, you kind of let it, the studio and the atmosphere and the energy of the sessions really take over, I think.
I fully agree with that. I was actually thinking when we left the studio, you know, what the sort of common denominator is with studios that are surrounded by nature, you know, like fields and overgrown sort of hedges and stuff. And I feel like if we'd been slap bang in the middle of Berlin or something, you know, you know, in the 70s, the albums would have sounded completely different. It felt like we were genuinely cut off in a way. And that really, I think that informed the sort of sound of the album in certain ways. It spans different colors in a way, you know, sonically speaking. And I think that might be something to do with that mild isolation as well.
That's really lovely. You kind of touched on it there. I did want to talk about kind of the lyrical aspect of this album, because your first record explored and extracted some quite personal topics and was quite an honest reflection on mental health. And I guess it kind of makes sense that you saying that this album was more lyrically collaborative, that this record is kind of broadening the band's writing thematically and is maybe, I don't know, having a little bit more like cryptic lyrics. When writing this album, what did you kind of find yourselves thinking and reflecting on as a band?
Definitely the weird fractured history of this island and this province, for sure, is something that's come up a lot, and we're all really interested in its history. I mean, it's something that comes up all the time, and there's a lot of like generational trauma that sort of stemmed from it. And as well as that, I think the past, we talk a lot, and we have talked a lot about like there's kind of a lot of futures that could have happened here, that never were, because of, you know, failed promises and things like that. But as well as that, I think it's about kind of finding little moments of beauty and community and communion together in like weird times, whether it's, you know, I suppose, I mean, there's some more lighthearted ones, like I made reference to like whenever a snooker player from here won like the World Snooker Championships in the 80s. But it was one of those things where it's just like, everyone forgets all the horrible troubles that are happening for a minute and just celebrate something that happened to a local lad. But as well, or you know, people going out and finding rave culture in the 90s, and you know, they're sitting up in like 3 a.m. sorting out the world's problems, and everything's fine for like, you know, until the next morning. But it's those extrapolated, I suppose, into a bigger context. And as well, Jake wrote nearly half the lyrics, I think, as well on the record. And so speaking to him, he has his own perspective, obviously, and he's like got an autism diagnosis and realized that he was, and it's like all those old lyrics make sense now. And we were all in worse place as well mentally, probably, at that stage. And now it's probably more about looking outward, but Jake's definitely coming into like a BCAD kind of a perspective with his, I think.
I sing one track on the album, and I actually have no idea what it's about, so I can't give much about that. But I will say, like, to extend what Stevie's saying there, and not even extend it, just underline it, it feels like, from an outsider, relatively speaking, it's sort of like finding majesty in what could be considered the mundane, but it's actually really, really, it's deeper than that. It's friendship, it's communion among friends, and there's no attesting to anything beyond that, and that, I think that really makes it special.
That's so beautiful. And this is your sophomore album, and I feel like there's a lot of kind of conversation in the industry where people are, you know, talking about the pressure of releasing a sophomore album, particularly when previous work has done really well. And you guys have won 3 awards at the Northern Ireland Music Prize, so there is definitely a bit of that. Did you kind of find that you feel particular pressure after such recognition, and did that kind of play into your creative process when writing your sophomore album at all?
Thank you for saying that as well, like just acknowledging something like that, because it's provincial, but it does mean something to us, you know, in the grand scheme of things. I think those awards were reflective of, you know, in the NI Music Prize or the Northern Ireland Music Prize, it was like best live album or best live act, sorry, and best video and things like this, best single. But we are, we feel like we're an album band. We're just pretty slow at doing it. But we're really happy with how it sounds. So if we end up winning that, we'll be delighted. But everything else is a bonus apart from holding it in our hands, to be honest.
Yeah, I think really it's just, you can't be everything to everyone. I absolutely understand that we are not for everyone, and that's totally cool. I just, you know, if there are people who dig the kind of, have the same principles as you, or into the same kind of stuff as you, they recognize it, that means far more to me. If someone just came up, like the conversations I've had, like just at the merch table or at a gig, where someone's just sort of said a certain song meant a lot to them. That means more than anything, honestly, more than 9 out of 10 in the Rolling Stone, which we which we won't get anyway. But you know, if we did, it wouldn't mean anything different. You know, it's just, it's again, I think we're in music for the togetherness, I think. But yeah, as well as that, just be part of the community. It really does mean a lot. So like, that extends from, there's no elevation between audience and listener, I think, in like a good live performance or anything like that. It's all, and everyone takes what they want from it as well.
And you each play in different bands outside of Junk Drawer as well. How do you kind of allocate your creative endeavors across different projects?
You done your research. I guess they're all an extension of different relationships you have with the people you're playing with as well. Like, I could bring one idea to one band and it would be dragged out for 40 minutes as one note, for example. And those people would do a totally different thing. So I think it's like, for me, being in a band is this thing that happens in a room. I mean, there's times when you can do it on your own as well, but I think it's this thing, this reaction that happens in a room between those constituent parts. Like, if I bring in a riff and I have something in my head that it's going to sound like, for a second it's like, that's not how I expected it to sound, and then you clock it and you're like, oh, this is much, much better, and you get this like alchemy thing that happens. So I think there's a little bit of that, like, I try not to overthink it, but you just have to trust in the alchemy that it'll go wherever it needs to go with each band. And it helps that every project I'm in, sort of, you know, you find yourself falling into the same little, you know, pockets of playing and performing and things like that. But I think other people bring other things out of you, much like in conversations and relationships. It's the same as that, you know. You have different conversation with your ma than you would have with, you know, your mate that you've had for years.
I doubt that you know this, but I do play in a hard rock band called Cross-Eyed Mary that's named after a Jethro Tull hit.
Oh, wow. And,
bonded by a mutual love of Guns N' Roses early years. Which me and Stevie also share, to be honest, to some extent.
Yeah.
You won't hear me jump far, but I also meddle a bit on, you know, solo stuff on keys and all this sort of thing, but there's no ambition there. I hold my hands up and say I do want Junk Drawer to do well. We formally exist. We properly exist.
But Brian has some really, really lovely like synth and keys music that he does as well.
Yeah, oh,
it is great. It's a totally different thing as well. Yeah.
A little drifty. And I think some of the keys on this record, actually, some of the sort of, you know, organ-y sort of sounds is stuff that I'm increasingly obsessed with. So I look forward to us writing album number 3, because I think there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff developing there. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, no, I think so too.
I also did read somewhere that something that has been quite influential, or like, I don't know how influential, but like a little bit to your sound, was music that was coming out in New Zealand in the 80s, which is so cool to hear and to kind of make that connection. I think also because it was such a like formative and important part of like our, like the music coming out of the country as well, like for us. And it's cool that that's kind of translated overseas, like the music coming out of Flying Nun Records. I don't know if that's meaning anything, but in the 80s,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, like the post-punk and kind of Dunedin sound and rock sound that was coming out was so big here. So it's so cool that that kind of went overseas. Tell me a bit about that, because that's wild to me.
Yeah, I really wanted to ask actually about that to you, because I was like, it's obviously a big deal to sort of a certain type of, you know, indie rock, post-punk, guitar music fan here. Around the world, obviously, because it's had such an important impact, because it's like they're such a great example of how to run and like a DIY/independent music scene anyway. But like, yeah, bands like, you know, like The Clean and like, oh, Roy Montgomery, I remember having a moment with one of the songs on She Waits in Temple 4 when we were on tour coming into London, the rain was hitting.
Yeah.
And I just had to like close my eyes and look out the window because it was like hitting me so hard. just the intense drone of it. But there's so many talented people. I never even clocked it until it was, we got a press release written by one of our booking agents, but he honed in on that, and then we got chatting with Flying Nun, and I was like, yeah, they actually really are like the prototype for this kind of thing. Queen. Sorry, Brad, I was talking over you there.
No, that's, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Roy Montgomery is, I mean, is there a more universally appreciated hero among the people who are aware of his work? He's like legend status, you know? But I love the fact that, like, Flan Dunn have taken that from the 80s and moved on, and the same, like, the way Sub Pop have done in a way, you know, where, like, you think about Beach House and something like, obviously, Bleach, those things couldn't be more different, whereas, like, Aldous Harding and then the Verlaines and, like, Sneaky Feelings and who else, like, The Chills and stuff like this. It's just a remarkable sort of portfolio of bands and artists.
Yeah, that's it. It's all just tied together by a spirit of, like, leaning into your own uniqueness. That's really it. And, like, that's what, I mean, I suppose that's what we're trying to do as a band anyway. But it epitomizes that really well for, like, a specific ethos, you know?
Oh, it's so cool to hear. I feel like it's really easy here. I don't know, we feel quite small sometimes. So it's, like, so cool that people from Ireland are picking it up as well. I'm like, oh, that's great. Like, we appreciate it too.
We're absolutely not the only ones.
Yeah.
A friend of ours, Elaine Malone, actually just, like, did a collaborative track with Roy Montgomery. And
oh,
it's
my
like,
God.
Yeah, no.
That's
real,
so
real
good.
Heads know.
That's so sick. Are you guys touring for this album as well?
Yeah. We're like doing the Netherlands later in the year, hitting London. We're hoping to. We just toured Ireland there with Cola and Male, who are both amazing bands.
So great.
And we have a few Irish dates over the summer, some festival shows. We're playing one this weekend, and then I think next year we'll probably hit Europe a bit wider. Would absolutely love to travel further in the world, but it's just who'll have us, you know?